You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa Podcast. Welcome back to the first El Arpa Podcast of the new year. Joining me in the studio, like last year and the year before, is the wonderful Mary. How are you doing?
Yay! I'm doing very well, thank you.
Fantastic. Are you excited for a new year of more podcasting?
Definitely, and everything else.
Trashing exhibitions, making silly voices.
Exactly.
In jokes that the audience doesn't understand.
Swearing.
If you hated all of that from the last 2 years, tune in for more. We're just about ready to launch our new website, which is a new fangled scrolly one, so you can see all of those things scrolling down the page. So it's going to be exciting to replace the terrible one that we have currently. And we're going to have links to all our stuff, and links to archaeological stuff and football things as well, because both sides of Marienda, El Arpa, have links to those two things. So today we did toddle off to an archaeological museum, Mary's natural habitat. We have spoken about that before in previous podcasts, and you've given tours in the museum as well. So mm-hmm. We're going to be talking very momentarily. Can you say very momentarily in the same sentence together?
I don't think so.
Okay, strike that. We'll be talking momentarily. No, strike that. We'll be talking very about archaeological stuff in the museum. Did you pick up anything? You've been learning Irish over the course of the summer months, or summer month that was July.
I have, yes, over the course of a 3 week holiday. Yes, well, I'd already studied a little bit, but I was kind of revising / getting back to the beginning.
Can you say any fully formed phrases?
See, the problem is, like, I know how to write them down, but I don't know how to pronounce them, and you're going to help me with that.
I will. I did buy a dictionary as well, so
yes,
lots of good actually, stuff there for vocabulary. What's been the most enjoyable part of learning Irish? What's been the most challenging part about learning Irish? The most challenging part is finding an Irishman who speaks it.
Yes, well, that's true, yeah, but luckily we have you as a representative.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't kill her.
What's Jon Snow's name in Irish?
Oh, well, I could spell it, but I don't know how to pronounce it.
Sean Schnachta.
Schnachta, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the Game of Thrones character, I'm talking about the BBC presenter.
Well, either way.
They're different people.
It was for everything.
Does John spell differently?
Schnachta. No. What is it? J-O-N.
No, one of them is J-O-H-N.
We'll have to check
one of them is G-O-H-N-N-Y to his friends.
Is that right?
That is right, yeah.
Well, I don't know.
My name is known simply as Jay, down at local boozer.
Well, we'll check that out when we're home.
Have you been catching all the lovely incest in the latest season?
Well, you're not supposed to know anything about it because you never watch it.
I know, yeah. I have no desire to either.
Yeah, no, there's no incest so far.
Yeah, no incest so far?
No.
So you've been following it?
They were like...
Despite going on record before saying you're tired of it, you've gone back on the Game of Thrones trail.
Well, oh, did I now? Yeah. Yes, I was tired of it. Yeah. Maybe, yeah. Well, I'm just, like, you know, giving the benefit of a doubt for the first few episodes that finished in one episode.
Okay. Well. Very nice. I heard there's a very interesting eunuch scene.
Well, not much going on, definitely.
Not much going on for the eunuch, I know that, yeah.
You know, like, considering this, considering you don't like watching it, you don't watch it at all, you know a lot of stuff.
Well, all that stuff.
Only the saucy parts.
Only the saucy part, which is basically 90% of it.
Well, not so much this season.
Are you sound disappointed by that?
I'm not, I'm certainly not, but I just feel like I have to clarify that, since you always tell me off for this.
I don't tell you off for anything.
Well.
I'm just surprised for your threshold that you can sit through it.
Well, I didn't say I could see through it. You certainly know that I cover my eyes for most things. Yeah.
Okay, well, interesting nonetheless. Mm-hmm. Time for part two.
Certainly.
Part two is upon us. Much like American bombs over Afghanistan pretty soon. Strange link. Didn't work. Out of practice. Rusty at this whole podcasting thing. So the scene of the crime was the Museum of Archaeology in Madrid, and they have a lot of floors you can go visit there. As we mentioned earlier in the first part, you've given tours there as well. Is it an easy place to give tours in? Is it navigable for the average slack-jawed tourist?
Well, ever since they did the refurbishment like 6 years ago or so, it definitely is a lot better than it used to be, and it's quite a nice museum. The only problem is the space is a little bit reduced if you have big groups, and also at the weekends there are activities with children and all that, so you can get a little bit complicated for people to hear you and so on, but no, it's a nice display.
How many Imhotep amulets have been broken or coloured in by crayons?
Coloured in, certainly many, I would have thought so. No, now they have like workshops for children as well, and it's quite nice.
Have you ever spent 6 months deciphering the colours of one of these amulets, and then after months of discovery, you realise it's just Crayola? It's giving its pigments.
Well, it could have well been the case, but...
Not yet.
Not yet, but yeah.
And what happened to your polyester, your cotton?
My cotton.
Your fibre.
Oh, right. Well, actually...
Well,
bit
of a recap for people who have forgotten.
Yes, because I've forgotten myself. I didn't know what you were talking about.
Well, you did research for a few times in...
A few times.
You're not in CSI, so it's not like your weekly job, but in the university.
Yes.
And you discovered a material.
Yes, it was a piece of fiber within a piece of pottery that I was examining.
Okay.
And
Levi's, Wranglers, what was the conclusion?
We weren't quite sure, but it was some sort of like, you know, linen, something like that. Yeah. Papyrus reed. We weren't completely sure, and actually like it was so small that it just had to be given to the experts for analysis.
Okay.
And after that, I don't know what happened, because that was in June, I believe, and you know, the summer was Spain.
And I believe you mentioned before it was linked to the garment that Tutankhamun wore the night before his death.
Certainly. It's either that or the Last Supper, one of the two.
Well, not the Last Supper, that'd be ridiculous.
I think the Tutankhamun thing wouldn't be ridiculous.
Well, no, if it's part of the Last Supper, Jesus' face would be on it, and it isn't, so it's not.
Oh, right.
Flawless reasoning.
Like, well, I was going to say it's actually very small, but I suppose like there's that grain of rice with the Bible written on, so.
That's true, yeah.
It's not enough of a...
Good things come in small packages. Isn't that right, Napoleon Bonaparte? Okay, but we're losing the thread of the conversation.
Oh, hey, well done. I think we've actually had a conversation about this thing or this thread before somewhere.
I know, I'm holding one end of a thread or something.
Not that one.
So, anyway, we went to a free exhibition today, and it was particularly interesting to you, Mrs., because you've been... You're going to be going to Egypt, potentially, on an excavating tour. How many local items that are of significant cultural value to the place you're going to, are you going to bring back for the prestige of Spain?
Well, obviously none. You crazy person, you've been watching too many archaeology movies.
Okay, well, you know, since like Britain haven't given back the Elgin Marbles, for example.
Very true.
And the Louvre is still open. I just thought it's 90% stolen, isn't it? Well, I don't know what the ratio is, but a significant portion I would imagine. But anyway, we're losing the fabric of the podcast. So we went to this free exhibition, which was a photographic series by a famous Spanish photographer who specialised in photographing archaeological digs.
Correct.
/ sites, full stop, yeah?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And what's his name?
José Latoa.
And why is he dominating the market? Why is he dominating this particular niche?
Well, you see, if it was for the exhibition, we wouldn't have this information, because the exhibition didn't actually go into detail about why he was such a prominent figure.
Okay.
Which is something that we missed. I'm already going into the...
Well, I guess the fact, because there are so many I mean, there's so few opportunities for people that once you start doing, you're the guy who does something.
Yeah,
everybody just turns to you.
No, that is true. Things like work a lot like that when, especially for foreign expeditions, you know, like when once you find somebody who can actually do something specific, then yeah.
And I believe he's using as his camera of choice an original Nokia 3310. No, I tried 210, that didn't have a camera function, but a 3310. So it's like some kind of hipster archaeological photographer.
No, it's just that the exhibition was a little confusing because but what he had on display was mostly the things that he used in the 80s and 90s and so on. So obviously a lot of things that are no longer useful, you know, like floppy disks and things like that.
There was in the Tabacalera, they had something similar, because they usually have three exhibitions at the same time. Mm-hmm. At one point, back in April or May, they had a few photographs of archaeological digs, and it is, I don't know, it's not particularly inspiring, one would have to say. Well, you said pottery was crap the other day, so...
Hey! Yeah. No, I mean, the thing is, like, with these sort of things... Well, I think people get easily excited about archaeology, you know, in certain aspects, like, can be quite flashy for people.
The gleam of the metal detector of the Egyptian sun, that kind of flashy.
No, as in, you know, things that are, well, big treasures and all these things that people...
The trowel glimmering as it does its work, digging in and out of the Egyptian sun.
Obviously those things aren't quite as exciting to people. And that's the issue, but I don't know, the whole thing with the exhibition, for example, for archaeologists, well, yeah, it's interesting, look at that side, the other side, but for the general
public... Up and down and left and right.
Yeah, but for the general public, I don't know, I think it was missing a bit of flesh, to be honest.
Well, I guess because a lot of the bodies had decomposed.
Thousands
of years.
Yes, that might be the reason.
Probably is it. Like, for example, there's also a section on the morality or the care and due diligence one must do when making digs, and the idea that you can only dig once, essentially, and there's a lot of paperwork involving that as well.
Yeah.
So is that area that, you know, it's the thing that we don't think about, non-archaeological... Archaeologists, archaeological people. Archaeologists, that's the word. That's the thing that we lay people, to use a politically correct term, don't really consider and probably aren't really aware of what the extent of that aspect is. Is that aspect relatively straightforward, or are there situations where, because you do the paperwork a certain way, or you decide to dig in a certain way, that it becomes very controversial? So the due diligence and the standards of practice can get you into some trouble if you interpret it in a different way.
The standards of practice, as per everything, almost everything else in Spain, they are determined by the community, like the Comunidad Autónoma. So it's a regional thing completely. So, you know, the rules to dig in Madrid are not the same as the rules to dig in Andalusia or elsewhere. So you need to be aware of, like, what the norms, the rules are in that particular area and the relevant process.
And if you dig in Barcelona, do you have to sign a waiver where everything you dig up is cattle then?
Well, yeah, for example, like a lot of the documents that have to be produced, because digging is not just, you know, getting things out, it's actually writing reports and disseminating information and documenting things. And yes, it's often the case that these things, you know, the particular law establishes that they have to be published in the local language.
For example... maybe 10 years ago, when Ireland, the Irish government in Dublin were digging, digging up a road, or some old structure, they found a lot of Viking remains, and now it's part of a huge Viking experience, which you can enjoy in Dublin. Do you think there are a lot of undiscovered finds to be had in Spain at the moment?
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, there's such a big like Roman past that there's just... virtually an entire Roman Spain underneath, you know. Definitely, there's always archaeology.
Well, I know, like, Media is the Spanish city that's famous for its Roman ruins. And I know in Madrid as well, you can find small, very, very small fragments of that as well. Mm-hmm. I think there's a wall that exists. And also in Barcelona, there's some buildings that still exist from that time as well. Mm-hmm. Is there any reason why there shouldn't be more cities like Media that have such an obvious display of Roman civilization?
Well, I mean, I think that this Spain has its fair share of, at least of, certainly of Roman stuff. After Rome, it was basically the main province. So
yeah,
so yeah, there are a lot of...
Hence the Spaniard character in the Gladiator.
Yes, indeed. And while you're talking about Merida, well, that's relevant too. Yeah. But yes, there were some very important cities, Roman cities in Spain, even at empire level. So
yeah.
But obviously the main thing with archaeology is that things get reused. That's just a human fact. If you need stone, then you know you just get stone from a place that is abandoned, and then destruction happens.
And you knew a lot. You know a lot of people who are in the photographs in the exhibition because you've studied with them, and they've encouraged you and developed your career
very much. So.
And you were full of praise for a lot of these people. But
it wasn't that bad.
Should have heard the words she was using. Expletives this and expletives that. But,
what?
A budding archaeologist, a 12-year-old boy or girl. Do you think it's an interesting place to take them? Do you think it's enough to stoke the nascent fires of interest in
well, the museum definitely is. The museum as it stands definitely is. The exhibition in itself, well, to be honest, like these exhibitions are like the free ones that are put up temporarily in the archaeological museum. They're not meant to be, you know, massive displays of things. They're meant to like explore little details. But I think I've certainly seen others, even if they were small, they were more, I don't know, slightly more enlightening than this one.
It was an enriching experience in one aspect because you got to see, there's a very old-fashioned book about Photoshop and old-style literature and equipment, and I guess it's a lot easier to capture things digitally and use technology in the field. So were you thinking that when you were walking through, that back then it probably was a bit more complicated to capture these things digitally?
Well, I think the thing that... the exhibition kind of like hinted at the end but didn't quite explore was the fact that now photography has been used for as a tool for many other things, reconstruct both excavations and objects, like with photogrammetry, or you know, these techniques that allow you to build like 3D, like virtual models of objects, for example, of or entire sites or stratigraphy.
What you're doing right now, no?
Which I'm doing right now.
For what university?
It's for a museum, Ibiza Museum. Yeah.
Fantastic. And have you in this university or this museum? Well, yeah, I'm sure you've seen the facial reconstructions. This is what this person probably looked like or could have looked like. Do you think those tools are useful for generating more interest or giving a more accurate picture of different time periods? Basically putting flesh on bone.
Literally. Yes, definitely. I think any reconstruction definitely helps people picture how things were, because not everybody has the ability to fill in the gaps when they look at objects. And at the end of the day, like, even though some people still like, you know, cling onto the objects are purely a tool to understand the people, from my point of view. So,
well, there was an interesting story last year in the newspaper about a French archaeologist who found a body at the top of a mountain from the Stone Age period, or around that era, and they found the food in his stomach, and he had been stabbed from behind, and because he had basically defensive wounds and other wounds on his body, the interpretation was that he had been in a fight the previous day, and perhaps the person he had fought went back up, and maybe got his revenge after perhaps losing the battle the previous day. And obviously you can never know that for sure. But it's this historical investigation that extends to even things that are very old, you know?
Yes, I mean, there's always some degree of interpretation with archaeology, you know. You can, some people get more carried away than others, but at the end of the day, that's the whole point of it. The whole point is to try and reconstruct what the past was like. So, you know, there's some degree of, like, interpretation involved, and as more and more objects or, like, you know, data comes out, then, you know, those interpretations can be made more accurate.
And we mentioned that, well, it's more an exhibition about the photographer himself, so it goes through his different stages. Yeah. Though it could be rejigged and maybe look at technology from, you know, different time periods up to modern times, or you could extract specific moments from that exhibition and maybe enlarge them and then have separate ones about that. So, you know, there are different things you could have done with it. We also saw that there was a guide tour which we did not avail of. You think that would make much of a difference for people if they went on this tour? Would their understanding and engagement with the subject be deeper, perhaps deeper than ours was?
I think that might be the case, but in any case, I think, you know, an exhibition, like, should be anything that a guided tour tells you should just complement what's there. An exhibition, from my point of view, should stand by, you know, by itself.
Should, like, speak for itself.
Yeah. Yeah, you should be able to understand what's going on, and really the guided tour is just an aid or like spoken support for it. But I think, well, if you cannot make the most of the exhibition without the tour, then I think there's something definitely wrong, and that's also a very important part, as we were saying before, of archaeology, the whole and history, the whole part of explaining and communicating to people is pointless otherwise, you know.
Okay, so an interesting experience with its pluses and minuses. It's ending, I think, on the 27th of August. Of course, if you're in the city, you can always go there for speeches and talks and other exhibitions. You can check on the archaeological website, which is pretty easy to find. We've been there before. We'll be there again, no doubt.
We'll have.
So if you're in the city looking for something a little bit different, you might like it, you might not.
Yeah.
You can do no worse than going to this photography exhibition from Mr.
José Latoa.
Perfect. Okay, well, that's been a pretty spectacular part two. Up next, part three. Much for that elucidating, enlightening, and entertaining appreciation of the of that exhibition. As they say, it was all Greek to me, or more appropriately, it was all Egyptian to me, because I didn't understand most of it, being a non-archaeological person myself, more of a layman, I would say.
You're going to reason eventually.
Well, I've always liked digging. I have no more to add.
Okay.
Anything else to add yourself before we wrap this up, on account of the searing heat in our office and the low battery on your iPad 2?
No, just keep an eye on everything that we're setting up. Everything is kicking off soon.
It is kicking off. Just to reiterate, a new website. We're going to be producing so much content, a lot of the podcasts as well. We're going to have a shop where you can exchange money for goods and services, and other key features of the website and our product. I mean our website. Now, it's not a product. We're not commercializing it. It's something we believe in artistically and creatively. We're not here to make money, but it does help. So thank you for sitting through another insufferable, pointless, god-awful, sorry, I'm reading the wrong script here, wonderful podcast of Al Arpa, the new one of the 2017/2018 academic course. Though we should stress that we're kind of rebranding a little bit. This is El Arpa English Academy, but of course we are also working under your umbrella of El Arpa Media Solutions. Okay, without the solutions. And basically, we'll be doing a lot of more stuff that appeals to people who are interested in ESL, English as a second language, but also people who are just interested in interesting topics. So this is what this podcast... Well, exactly. So this podcast caters for people who like archaeology or people who want to read blog articles, which we'll be doing about rhythm of speech and music and all these different things, these different topics. And of course, if you've been following our videos... I'm speaking very fast now because it's a low battery.
Culture.
All the culture, exactly. And the videos have touched on lots of different aspects, from poetry to museums to interviews and documentaries and promos for businesses. So, you know, we're trying to appeal to the lowest common denominator, basically. If James Corden was a podcast, he'd be this. So this is Lena for the first time, but not for the last of this year, saying goodbye. And I hope you tune in next week.
And Maria saying bye.
Ciao, ciao. You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa Podcast.